Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the EAL Radio Show, coming live to you with this breaking news.
Yes, on the Eastern Group, Swiss Air to acquire Eastern Airlines, EAL brand retained by Benjamin Barup. In Miami, charter airline Swift Air will acquire Eastern Airlines, according to an internal email sent to Eastern employees by CEO James Tolzien. The iconic resurrected Eastern Airlines brand is expected to remain and replace the Swift Air brand. However, the new Eastern, which began operations in May 2015, operating charter flights for sports team into Cuba, has been facing financial challenges in recent months. As a result, billionaire and primary investor Vincent Viola has been trying to find a buyer for the beleaguered carrier, with the Swift acquisition or shutdown becoming a constant rumor. Viola was at the center of controversy when he was considered to be President Donald Trump's nominee for the United States Secretary of the Army before withdrawing from consideration owing to difficulties of diversifying all of his investments. See more on our website on the Eastern Airline Group. We are speaking tonight at the beginning of our show on the exponential age in computers and how it will impact us. Any questions on EAL we are requesting you to please hold until this portion of our program is completed. Thank you.
Thriving in an exponential age, by Francisco Gomez. Most of us have a general understanding of technological improvement and innovation. We assume that things will change and advance over time. After all, we carry an electronic reminder of these improvements in our pockets. Every release of a new phone model, the latest app, newest OS, operating system, is emblematic of this rapidly improving technology. These improvements, however, are merely a hint of what is actually occurring and the accelerated trend it is part of. There is a great undercurrent of change being driven by biotechnology, artificial intelligence, robotics, networks, neuroscience, nanotechnology, and it is moving at an exponential rate of growth. This presents industries with as much opportunity as it does risk, and the outcome depends in large part on the ability of these technologies to rapidly, effectively influence employee behavior. After all, business results are the product of human behavior. To consider more in context about this subject before diving into the behavior implications, see Newsletter Online 2017.
Breaking news. Boeing studies pilotless planes as it ponders next jetliner. And this article was by Alwyn Scott. The Boeing company is looking ahead to a brave new world with jetliners that fly without pilots and aims to test some of this technology next year. The world's biggest aircraft maker, said in a briefing ahead of the Paris Air Show. The idea may seem far-fetched, but with self-flying drones available for less than $1,000, the basic building blocks of the technology clearly are available. This was said by Mike Schmidt, Boeing's Vice President of Product Development. The jetliner already takes off, crews, lands with the onboard flight computers, and the number of pilots on board has gone from 3 down to 2 over the years. Sinnott, a pilot himself, plans to test the technology in a cockpit simulator this summer and fly on an airplane next year some artificial intelligence that makes decisions that pilots would make. Self-flying aircraft would need to meet the safety standards of air travel, which has the highest safety record since 2016. They would also need to convince regulators who do not yet know how to certify such airplanes. I have no idea how we're going to do this, he said. You can see more of this in the newsletter online 2017.
Digital devices will be hidden, bringing both the benefits and the dangers. Byline, Tom Tetfield. Author Douglas Adams once made a witty point about technology. The inventions are labeled techniques, and simply we just haven't yet become invisible or effortless part of our lives, quote. We no longer think of chairs as technology, he argued, but there were a time that we hadn't worked out how many legs a chair should have, how tall they should be, how often they crash, and then we tried to use them. Before long, computers will be trivial and plentiful as chairs, and we will cease to be aware of these things. See more on Newsletter Online 2017. Jim.
Hello, Eastern family. It's time for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We are heard in many areas around the United States and listened to in over 40 countries around the world. We're adding news items as breaking news at the beginning of our show. Let us know your thoughts about this small change in the broadcast format. My name is Jim Hart, and along with other hosts, we're glad you're with us. The show is for you and about the Eastern family and Eastern Airlines. Neil, our producer, calls this kitchen table radio. And you know that's where I'm right now. Have comments or want to join the host, here's all you need to do. Go to www.ealradioshow.com and look for the radio icon on the home page. Click the arrow in the circle at 7 p.m. and you can listen in on your computer. You can also tune in by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. This site is a site of our provider, Blog Talk Radio. Now, here's an easier way. Just call us at 213-816-1611 at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and you can listen in right on your telephone. You can also join in the conversation by just saying, hi, since you're already on the phone, we want to hear from you. Neil, how about getting this episode in the air with the new Eastern airplane, the Lockheed L-1011 TriStar Whisper Liner?
Well, here we go.
Thank you. day goes by, feel yourself in it. It's a good day to up and fly away. It's so easy to do. He's still got the right time.
Not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
When Apple unveils its details about its smart watch at a showcase today...
Just a minute,
today,
Chuck. Chuck?
Okay.
I've got one more I want to put in here, and a lot of folks could remember this if they are after 70 years old. So here's a soundbite that I thought might go with the show, and you'll probably understand the reason. Let's see if we can play it.
Tracy to kids. Tracy to kids. Come in, kids. Come in, kids. It's here at last, the new Dick Tracy two-way wrist radio that keeps you in constant touch with your buddies. Easy to work. Up antenna, switch on, press talk button, and you broadcast from room to room and even house to house. No wires needed, yet voices travel back and forth. Radio on the open road from one bike to another or when out hiking.
Dad, I found a bear's cave.
Be right down, son.
The powerful, fully transistorized Dick Tracy two-way wrist radio is a real electronic instrument.
Make sure all the fellows get their A-OK Dick Tracy wrist radio so they can keep in touch. Over and out.
The one and only Dick Tracy wrist radio wherever American toys are sold.
Okay, I think Toys R Us has probably run out of that Dick Tracy wrist radio. But we all are, at least I always think way back when I was a fan of Dick Tracy and other radio shows. You had to visualize what was happening because it was radio, but they did a fantastic job of keeping the kids' interest. And with the rings and codes and the radio, wrist radio. And by golly, we're right here in the age of the wrist radio, which does a lot more than just a walkie-talkie type of thing, in that, golly, we get all sorts of things. We can monitor our heart, exercises and diets and you name it. We can look at our wrist watch and see what's happening to us and what's happening around the world, I guess. So I wanted to introduce that to begin our show about computerization, and some of you remember it. Now, we have a lot of background noise, so we're going to ask you to be as quiet as possible when your telephone is open, because I'm going to open all of the – we have a board full of callers, and I'm going to open them all, and I hope we can if you're not going to make a comment, just keep your phone muted. And here goes. Chuck, I'm sorry to have interrupted you. Will you continue?
Oh, that's fine. Because I used to have one of those wrist radios. In fact, I still do. When Apple unveiled the details about its smartwatch at a showcase today, it anticipated that the company would immediately nab over 50% of the global market in the wrist-worn mobile devices. But the trend of wearing your communication device on your wrist isn't exactly new. It has its origin in Dick Tracy's iconic wrist radio. If you're not up to date on your fictitious detective history, here's a little refresher. Dick Tracy made his debut in 1931 in a comic strip that still runs today. He's a talking crime fighter who often uses to nab the bad guy. In 1946, he started using a state-of-the-art two-way wrist radio while fighting crime. Less than a year after the comic strip showed Dick nabbing criminals with the flick of the wrist, the term Dick Tracy Watch was being used to market small portable radios. Harry McCracken reported for Time, and the idea of using a watch to communicate soon became what McCracken calls the most indestructible mean of tech journalism, a cultural touchstone that had outlasted cheesy movies, the radio revolution, and even the debut of the smartwatches. Now, how did the detective get his hands on the iconic piece of technology anyway? From a billionaire industrialist, of course. And Dick Tracy Museum recounts how Dick got his hands on the amazingly useful invention. Over the years, Dick Tracy's watch has done more than just serve as shorthand for portable two-way communication. It inspired the real thing, joining a long tradition of imaginary devices that now become real. But despite the prediction that Apple Watches will cause smartwatches to become ambiguous, don't expect Dick Tracy to trade his radio watch for an Apple model anytime soon. He still prefers his wrist radio and uses it in the comic strip as of today.
And then there's the comic strip, Flash Gordon. The comic strip was back in January 1934, and it followed the adventures of Flash Gordon, a handsome polo player, Yale University graduate, and his companions, Dale Arden and Dr. Hans Zarkoff. The story begins with Earth threatened in collision with the planet Mongo. Dr. Zarkoff invents a rocket ship to fly into space. He's going to stop the disaster. He's half mad, and he kidnaps Flash and Dale, and they travel to the planet. Landing on the planet and halting the collision, they come into conflict with Ming the Merciless, Mongo's evil ruler.
Linda, I'm going to
put
something in here right before you finish your little rundown about Flash Gordon, and some of you may remember this sound.
Okay.
If you're old enough.
All right.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
How peaceful it looks.
Most effective, Your Majesty. Will you destroy this Earth?
Later. I like to play with things a while. Before annihilation.
Okay, Linda. I just thought that might add a little bit to what you're about to tell us.
Okay. I'm going to switch now. What Chuck was talking about, Tom Chatfield, December 4th, 2013, it is found on the Internet. He quoted the author Douglas Adams. As Chuck said, technologies are inventions that haven't become invisible to us. We're still aware of them to the point that we're so invisible that we don't even know we're using them. We're not thinking about them. His prediction was prescient. It means what he suggested correctly is going to happen in the future. Computers have been such a dazzling, prominent force in our lives for the past few decades. It's hard for us to think that generations to come won't even consider computers to be technology, but like chairs, we don't think of them anymore as technology. We just accept them and don't think about them. Well, the same thing, he says, computer is going to happen with them. Today, computer screens, they draw constant attention. They're highly visible. We pour our waking hours into them, but we are about to enter the cusp of a moment when computering slips beneath our awareness, and this development will bring danger and benefits, and we will become so accustomed to computers, and we will have used them so extensively that what is coming is something called ubiquitous computing. Computer scientists have been predicting this moment is coming. They've predicted it for decades. This phrase, ubiquitous computing, was coined at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center in the 80s by the scientist Mark Weiser. It describes a world in which computers will become what he calls, quote, calm technologies. We won't see them. They will be silent. They're everywhere. They're omnipresent. So what we are beginning to see is a movement away from screens, and Google Glass is an example. Recent news stories have focused more on intrusion than invisibility. There's even a young word called glass holes, describing the kind of users who get kicked out of cafes. And glass represents the tip of a rapidly emerging iceberg of devices that are invisible because a user's not seeing. Their involvement is with speech, location, and movement, but they're not seeing. This category includes everything from discrete smartwatches, fitness devices, voice-activated in-car services, equally surreptitious, which means secret, are the number of rising smart buildings from shops and museums to cars and offices that interface with smartphones and apps almost without us noticing, and offer enhancements ranging from streamlining payments to knowing our light temperature and room preferences.
Dorothy, before you go into yours, I'm just going to interject here another soundbite that some of us remember at the Atlanta airport. And we've had him on our show before, but this is what technology did to subways, I guess you would say, and introducing you to Hal. Underground transportation system at the new Hartsfield Airport, Midfield Terminal. And we did a little story not too long ago about that terminal and how. And the computer age generates voices that are very human-like, I would say. Dorothy, what do you got about the intelligent cloud for us?
The consequences of all this will be profound. Consider what it means to have a primarily spoken rather than screen-based relationship with a computer. When you're speaking and listening rather than reading off a screen, you're not researching and comparing results or selecting from a list. You're being given answers. Or more precisely, you're being given one answer, customized to match not only your profile and preferences, but where you are, what you're doing, and who with. Google researchers, for example, have spoken about the idea of an intelligent cloud that answers your questions directly, adapted to match its increasingly intimate knowledge about you and everybody else. Where is the best restaurant nearby? How do I get here? Why should I buy that? Our relationship with computers in this context may come to feel more like companionship than sitting down to use a device, a lifelong conversation with systems that know many things about us more intimately than most mere people. Such invisibility begs several questions. If our computers provide such firm answers, but keep their workings and presence below our awareness, will we be too quick to trust the information that they provide, or too willing to take their models of the world for the real thing? As motorists already know to their cost, even a sat nav's suggestion can be hopelessly wrong. That's not to mention the potential for surveillance. More than a decade ago, critics of ubiquitous computing suggesting it is the feverish dream of spooks and spies, a bug in every object. Given this year's revelation about the NSA monitoring our communication, it was a present fear and one that had recent commentators reaching for that familiar adjective, Orwellian. There are, of course, causes for celebration about this technology, too. Hopes for a world in which computers, like chairs, simply support us without draining a particle more of our time, attention, or effort than required. And in any case, subsequent generations may not share the same concerns as us. As Douglas Adams put it, everything that already exists when you're born is just normal, but anything that gets invented after you're 30 is against the natural order of things and the beginning of the end of civilization as we know it. Yet as computers slip even further beneath our awareness, it is important that we continue to ask certain questions. What should an unseen machine be permitted to hear and see of our own and others' lives? Can we trust what they tell us? And how do we switch them off? Invisible computers are here, but we must remember to keep at least some of the facets within sight.
The exponential age where things happen and expand in the virtual blink of an eye. Just a few things for all of us to ponder this evening, especially the younger ones amongst us. Did you think back in 1998 that 3 years later you would never take pictures on film again? In 1998, Kodak had 170,000 employees and sold 85% of the photo paper worldwide. Within just a few years, their business model had disappeared and they went bankrupt. What happened to Kodak will happen in a lot of industries in the next 10 years, and most people won't even see it coming. Yet digital cameras were invented in 1975. The first ones only had 10,000 pixels, but followed Moore's law. So, as with all exponential technologies, it was a disappointment for a time before it became way superior and turned into mainstream, but a few short years later. Things like that now will now happen again with artificial intelligence, health, autonomous and electric cars, education, 3D printing, agriculture, jobs, and perhaps even the piloting profession. Welcome to the fourth industrial revolution. Welcome to the exponential age. Software will disrupt most traditional industries in the next 5 to 10 years, but here are but a few examples. Uber is a software tool. They don't own any cars and are now the biggest taxi company in the world. Airbnb is now the biggest hotel property in the world, although they don't own any properties. Artificial intelligence. Computers will become exponentially better in understanding the world. This year, a computer beat the best Go player in the world 10 years earlier than expected. In the U.S., young, inexperienced attorneys already don't get jobs. Because of IBM's Watson, you can get legal advice, which so far is more or less basic stuff, within seconds, with 90% accuracy compared with 70% accuracy when done by humans. So if you study law, perhaps you should consider another field. There will be 90% less lawyers in the future, and only the specialists will prevail.
Good.
Watson has already helped nurses diagnose cancer, which is 4 times more accurate than human nurses. Facebook now has a pattern recognition software that can recognize faces better than humans can. By 2030, computers will become more intelligent than humans. It will never happen, says Albert. Chuck?
Autonomous cars. In 2018, the first self-driven cars will appear for the public. Around 2020, the complete industry will start to be disrupted. You won't want to own a car anymore. You will call a car to your phone. It will show up at your location, drive you to your destination. You won't need to park it because you'll only pay for the driven distance and can be productive while you're driving. Our kids will never give a driver's license. They'll never own a car. And it will change the cities because we'll need the 90 to 95% less cars for that. We can transform our former parking spaces into parks. 1.2 million people die each year in car accidents worldwide. We now have one accident for every 60,000 miles, about 100,000 kilometers. With autonomous driving, that will drop to one accident and 6 million miles, about 10 million kilometers, and will save 1 million lives a year. Most car companies will probably become bankrupt. Traditional car companies try the evolutionary approach and just build a better car, while tech companies like Tesla, Apple, and Google will do the revolutionary approach and build a computer on wheels. Many engineers, Volkswagen and Audi, are completely terrified of Tesla. Insurance companies will have mass troubles because without accidents, the insurance will become 100 times cheaper. The car insurance business model will disappear. Real estate will change because if you can work while you commute, people will move farther away to live to a more beautiful neighborhood. Electric cars will become mainstream about 2020. Cities will be less noisy because all the new cars will run on electricity. Electricity will become increasingly cheap and clean. Solar production has been on the exponential curve for 30 years. You can now see the burgeoning impact. Don?
Last year, more solar energy was installed worldwide than fossil. Energy companies are desperately trying to limit access to the grid to prevent competition from home solar installations, but that can't last. Technology will take care of that strategy. With cheap electricity comes cheap and abundant water. Desalinization of salt water now needs only 2 kWh per cubic meter at 0.25 cents. I'm glad I got through that. We don't have scarce water in most places, but we do have scarce drinking water. Imagine what possibility it would be if everyone had a clean water and he wants to have it at no additional cost. Under health, the Tricorder X price will be announced this year. There are companies who will build a medical device called Tricorder from Star Trek that works with your phone, which takes your retina scan, your blood sample, and your simple breathe into it. And then it analyzes 54 biomarkers that will identify nearly any disease. It will be cheap, so in a few years, everyone on the planet will have access to world-class medical analysis nearly for free. Goodbye, medical establishments. Thank God for that. 3D printing. The price of the cheapest 3D printer came down from $18,000 to to $400 within 10 years. In the same time, it became 100 times faster. All major shoe companies have already started 3D printing shoes. Some spare airline parts are already 3D printed in remote airports. The space station now has a printer that eliminates the need for large amounts of spare parts that they have used in the past. Linda.
At the end of this year, new smartphones will have 3D scanning possibilities. You can 3D scan your feet and print your perfect shoe at home. In China, they have already 3D printed and built a complete six-story office building. And by 2027, 10% of everything that's being produced will be 3D printed. Business opportunities, if you think of the niche you want to go in, first ask yourself, in the future, do I think we'll have that? If the answer is yes, how can you make that happen sooner? If it doesn't work with your phone, forget the idea. And any idea designed for success in the 20th century is doomed to failure in the 21st century. Work, 70 to 80% of jobs will disappear in the next 20 years. There will be a lot of new jobs, but it is not clear if there will be enough new jobs in such a short time. This will require a rethink on wealth distribution. Agriculture, there will be a $100 agricultural robot in the future, and farmers in third world countries can then become managers of their field instead of them working all day on their fields. Aeroponics, which is the plant cultivation with the plant root system hanging in the air and the nourishment comes in the form of a mist on it, they'll need much less water. The first Petri dish produced veal. It's now available and will be cheaper than cow-produced veal in 2018. And right now, 30% of all agricultural surfaces is used for cows. Imagine if we don't need that space anymore. The times, they are changing.
Will robots make us their pets? Apple founder Steve Wozniak has no doubt artificial intelligence will take over the world. Apple co-founder made the comments to Australian Financial Review. The 64-year-old admitted he had previously dismissed claims technology will threaten humans in the next 30 years, but now realizes predictions are coming true and AI is a dangerous reality. He quipped, "Will we be the gods? Will we be the family pets?" That's a quote. His comments following warnings from Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, Mr. Musk recently said robots could replace humans as drivers, and previous reports have found AI could cause the economy to crash. Here's one more take on computers.
Computers, how they've changed our lives. This is dated August 21st, 2013. The invention of the computer is one of the most remarkable innovations that have occurred over the last 10 decades. The modern world is deemed digital. What most people fail to appreciate, however, is that the source of life, being digital, is the computer. Gone are the days when executing stuff was done manually. Today, at the click of a button, rocket machines have been launched. ICU life support systems are run, and instant communications are enabled, to mention but a few. Computers are defined as programmable machines that have two key features. They respond to a specific set of instructions which are given humans that have been well defined, and they can execute pre-recorded list of instructions usually referred to as a program. Therefore, computers execute what they have been instructed to do. Computers have evolved over the years from the static mainframe computers to the portable modern computers we use today. Modern computers are both electronic and digital and consist of artificial machinery such as wires, circuits, and transistors. These are referred to as the hardware, and the data and instructions that are fed into the computer, which are collectively referred to as software. Don?
Benefits of computers. Different sectors have benefited from the use of computers. Number one, computers have been of tremendous advantage to business and how business are conducted in their respective sectors. Technological advancements have made been so remarkable that those that have not yet incorporated the use of computers and the computer systems in their day-to-day business activities are suffering a great disadvantage as compared to those who are using computers. The business world uses computers for organization, self-sufficiency, reducing cost, increasing speeds of transactions, and managing sales. The second thing is, in the academic world, teaching and learning have shifted from the manual and exhausting modes of learning to compromised computerized versions. I'm sorry, folks, I'm having trouble seeing. Unlike traditional methods of teaching today, lectures and teachers are using PowerPoint presentations to teach. They save the slides on their computers and project them on screens. This is a more efficient mode of teaching as it allows for bigger audiences. Another great advantage is for students who are now using online learning facilities to learn about new stuff as well as research. There is no longer a need to walk miles to physical libraries to become access and academic materials as well as online libraries from the computers. Number three is in the medical industry, emerging technologies and computer developments have been of significant advantage. The life support systems all run using computers. Additionally, the records and this databases of the patients can all be saved once in the computer and accessed at any time if a person visits the hospital.
New trend. 21st century has been marked with dynamic trends. As far as computers are concerned, the capabilities of computers have since been so expanded, it's hard to imagine how life would be if they ceased to exist. Some of the most remarkable trends include computers have become intuitive. They now have the ability to learn, to recognize, and know what human beings want, as well as our identities. Computer chips are everywhere and have become almost invisible due to their small size, which is converse to the traditional bigger size chip. Computers are now able to manage important global systems, some of which include food production and transport. And today, online computer resources allow us to download applications via wireless access anywhere, anytime, at our convenience. Computers have become voice-activated, video-enabled, networked, connected together thanks to the Internet. These open the door for a myriad of functions. Computers today have digital senses, such as speech, that enables them to communicate with human beings and other computers. Finally, human and computer evolution have converged.
The type of computers. Computers come in all types, sizes, shapes. They're also distinguished with regard to their manufacturer, features, memory size, number of other features. The main categories of computers are however, listed Macintosh computers, notebook computers. These are the portable computers such as laptops, PCS, personal computers, that are mostly desktop computers. Servers, the main computer that gives command to other computers connected to it. Supercomputers, these are computers used in science lab facilities and other research purposes. The scope and types of computers is very broad, and therefore the categories listed above have in no way exhausted the type of computers available. The invention of the computer and the subsequent technological development that has been made to enhance their capabilities has been very significant to human beings and all the processes and activities that we engage in, ranging from entertainment to food production, life-saving issues. And it's hard to find activities that do not need the use of computers. The use of computers will continue to be embraced by the generations to come.
That's our story, or that's our program for tonight. and we want your thoughts. There are many callers on our board, and if you'd like to express your thought or your concern or how you use or dislike the computer, we'd like to hear from you right about now. So anything. I'd like to ask Jeff Lewis, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm listening. It's been good so far. I've actually heard it all, too.
Okay, very good. Well, maybe it'll be even a little bit better when we get some thoughts from you. Jeff is out in the Seattle, Washington area. He was a former controller, air traffic controller, on our show last week. And he emailed me saying that he wanted to listen in, and we want to tap his thoughts about the computer in air traffic control from the old board, the whiteboard or blackboard, I guess, in the old days. Didn't they call them the boats that you placed on the board to find out where airplanes were and had to have the pilots to call in with over the fix time and estimate to the next fix? And what do you think has happened, or can you tell us your thoughts about what has happened when you were a controller, what you've seen has been improved over the years? Jeff?
Well, the horizontal displays, those are shrimp boats, and they were little plastic trays. I never worked with them. They were around about the time I was just a little kid and learning about what JFK had said, and then seeing people get shot and wondered, boy, what kind of world did I get born into? the computers really have changed a lot of what air traffic control is doing, and certainly on the flight deck, too, in terms of automation, in terms of detecting hazards and resolving hazards without us, either in the control end or the pilot, and really having to do much more than monitor. We did have some more primitive technologies. When I went first to a tower in early 87, we were doing reel-to-reel digital tapes. And we had, that was part of our routine every day, was to take the tape out and store it away for a couple weeks, put another tape on, and make sure we got it all loaded right. That all 10 years later, so in the mid-90s, that went to digital chips. We have a lot of digitized electronic switching going on in our communications to the point where in air traffic control, they're loaded with a lot of touch displays. You have, you know, a pretty intricate number of communications outlets that you can go to just at the touch of a finger, and then speaking right into whoever's ear it is you need to coordinate something with. Then you get down to what's on the radars and stuff in terms of the integration of all the weather, the integration of a lot of information, how it can be digitized and presented in multicolor, how they can supplement what used to be little flashing radar blips that had no tag. Many decades ago, they added the alphanumeric data blocks, and then they went into color and did all sorts of other things and functionality that actually kept those. Well, for example, you could put up what was called a J-ring, a circle that would be centered on your target, on the airplane that you're trying to track, so you could keep that bubble from bumping into another bubble. And, of course, the airplanes would never get close to crashing, but it made it really easy for you to scope out if you need 3 mile or 5 mile separation to figure out how many degrees you can turn somebody else to save 20 seconds or whatever, shorten their route a bit. There's a lot of different things you could do because of the way it became digitized. And yeah, it all goes back to the computers. That said, of course, Bill Schuster and other people are telling us that we're using World War II technology. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? The wheels on my car date back thousands of years. And yet it still gets me there. Charcoal and the pencil with which I can write and think and create words, that goes back tens of thousands of years.
Very good thoughts. We've got so many callers. Carlene, are you with us tonight?
I am here. Want me to tell you what I think about technology today?
I'm begging you.
We get so dependent upon it. Comcast went out. My modem went out. And I was supposed to have a Skype call with somebody. And then I'm on a phone call, and my little iPhone decides that I need to reboot it because it doesn't want to, you know, speaker doesn't want to work anymore. And so I think that we become so dependent with technology, but it breaks. And I would love to step back in time and own a telephone that, well, I like the texting. All I want to do is text, talk, and listen to my music. And so I'm over, my technology is way over for what I use it for. But, you know, when the stuff goes down and we don't have access to it, we get dependent upon it, and then what do we do?
What's the operator, telephone operator on Saturday Night Live that was so successful plugging in the calls? Who?
Emily Latella.
I thought it was someone else on Saturday Night Live.
Gilda Radner.
Yeah, well, no, it wasn't her either. It was another gal that had that hairstyle, you know, back in the 20s, and she would plug in.
The character was called Ernestine.
Ernestine, yes, at the switchboard. That's right, yeah.
Right.
Is that what you want to go back to, Carlene?
Well, not exactly. You know, but I just like it to work when it works.
Well,
you know,
you
think about the power outage. What are we going to do when your power goes out? Because you can't run on your electronic treadmill. You can't watch your television. You can't use your computer. You know, it's like your whole world shuts down because no power. Yeah. Which is kind of a shame. But, you know, and I'm like watching all these little children who are using all these electronic devices at a very, very early age. And it's actually stated it's rewiring their brains. It's they're growing their brains differently now, and they're showing this. You know, we haven't really figured out if it's for better or for worse, but it is altering these children's brains on how they're thinking and processing information by this technology they're using at such a young age.
Yeah. I kind of like it when mine max up. I call my grandson, and he tells me how to fix it.
Yeah, but my grandson's only 5 years old, so I don't have that privilege yet, but one day.
We've got callers. Yeah, Don.
Something that I think about often, we do these shows about what's going to be happening in the next 5 years. With no pilots, with no human pilots in the cockpit of an airplane, but it's being flown by computer, is it possible, I guess it is, for someone to hack into that system and divert that airplane or do something worse?
Well, Don, I know.
Yeah,
they've made movies. You're right, Chuck. Go ahead with your movie.
Well, they did exactly like he said. It was an autonomous airplane, and all of a sudden these bad guys on the ground, not in the air, not in the airplane itself, on the ground, hacked into the computer system of the airplane and then held the airplane for hostage. They said if they didn't get paid so much money, they were going to crash the airplane. And of course, the good guy was running around trying to figure it out.
Another movie was one about air traffic control, where they actually hacked into air traffic control and were sending airplanes different directions and altitudes and so forth. I don't know, possible. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
I would think it would be quite possible. But, you know, I'm really speculating. I don't know what kind of security they have. I have seen articles where people have questioned whether the next-gen system that's one of the big question areas. It's just how secure is it?
Yeah.
They have these programmed systems that are set up to exchange information all over the place. When you do that, you're creating opportunities for bad agents to get in and access and contaminate that information and turn it into something that it's not.
That's what worries me.
Hey, Neil?
Yes, George.
you know, something that Jeff just said brought, you know, when NextGen was first introduced and first worked on, Randy Babbitt, who was a former Eastern pilot, was the head of the FAA. As you know, he subsequently was booted out of the position. But he might be an interesting guest to have on the show to find out, you know, exactly what is going to be the difference between NextGen and the fact that we, with INS, we can go point to point today. So what's the advantage of NextGen over the current system and questions like that? I don't know. I just came to my mind as Jeff had mentioned that.
Yeah, good thought. I have wanted to put Randy on. Randy flew with me a couple of times, co-pilot, and I think we did a show on his father, Slim Babbitt, earlier, about 3 years ago or more. And Slim, of course, was very active in the Airline Pilots Association. And he would be a very interesting guest, and I'm sure he's current enough since he's left the FAA that he would have insight as to what's happening there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as long as we kept it to that, I don't think it would cause too much of an uproar with the former Eastern people, you know. But it's your call.
Yeah. We'll
can I add something about the security thing? Yes. Can you imagine this? If we could have the tightest security and they fixed the most a system that cannot be penetrated. But what's going to happen is you're going to have a warehouse on the ground with they don't even require college educated. So uneducated people in there managing, you know, an individual with maybe three or four departures, and they fly them, and they're going to be managing these four aircraft or five or however many they decide they're going to load them up. And we've got this huge, huge room with all these people. Now you can, you know, maybe solve the hacking of the actual aircraft, but you will never solve the security of that building because somebody, all it takes is one person to open the door to get terrorists into that building. And then what happens? You know, now you've allowed them into the building. It is a control center for the aircraft in the sky. So it doesn't even have to be a virtual hacking. It's just at least when we get the aircraft in the sky, hopefully we've done a good job and kept the terrorists out of the aircraft. But then when we're flying, if we have somebody who's not so good, at least maybe we can keep them out of the cockpit. But we're going to be able to fly to destination. You know, can you imagine having hundreds of thousands of aircraft out being operated by a control center that has just been infiltrated? What would happen?
Carlene, would you write a novel about that?
You know what? Actually, that was going to be my third novel. And then plot points from the other novels keep rolling in. So the industry keeps giving me new novels. I keep pushing this one out, but actually this is a novel in the works. Because,
okay.
You know, but you're always supposed to end it. You're always supposed to end your book with a good ending. And I don't know how that could ever be good. That would be the most, you know, and just having somebody give somebody the key to that room.
Boy.
And walk in.
Would I like to see you and George Jen corroborate a book?
Yeah, we will do that.
Wow.
One day after we go to law school together.
Right. We're working on it.
Well, look how many movies that we've seen that have gangsters, and it sounds far-fetched, but somebody cuts off a thumb so they can use that, carry it with them to go and open up a bank door or something like that. Or you have to have the eye of a person to open up to get into entry somewhere. When you stop and think about the disasters that could happen because of some of this technology, it's very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure is. You know,
I was thinking today as John and I were going up 95. There were so many cars on 95, and I said to John, how are they going to have cars that just don't have a pilot or one of these air pilots? You get up in your building and you get in your plane, you call a plane, and you take off in your plane, but who's managing the sky? how many people are going in the same direction as you and going to take a different pathway off of it, but it's still the same direction. I mean, you talk about accidents on the road now. What about too many flying taxis in the sky?
It's going to be a lot of midairs.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm going to have to end it right there, and we've really given a good discussion on our topic tonight, computers and into the future. But we also want to leave a little time to talk about Eastern Airlines and what we recently found out about the sale of Eastern Airlines. And anyone, Dorothy or Jim, you've read, Jim Hart, you've read the complete 20, I think Jim said there is 22 pages to read about the purchase of the Eastern Airlines Group by Swift Air. And so that was our breaking news earlier, and Dorothy did say that perhaps we can shed some thoughts on what happened there and what might happen to the airlines. It's open.
Well, I just want to mention that the new Eastern is going to have the colors on the aircraft that belongs to Swift Air. They're saying that they're going to keep the branding on it, and so I think that's important to all the Eastern people to know. They do have 13, I guess, Boeing 737-300s and 400s, and they're trying to get certification for the 737-800s.
Any additional thoughts about the new Eastern group?
When I read the article, getting through it, it all hinges on the 51% stockholder. You know, he wants to sell the airline, but he couldn't get any buyers. And that's one of the things that you have to kind of keep your eye on, because if somebody comes and offers this man gobs of money, the airline's gone.
Well, they mentioned back in March that another buyer was looking at it, the AirSale Corporation, and they were very interested, but I'm not sure the money was there because it didn't happen. This one seemed to catch more of the eye that was worthwhile.
Yeah, I think the stake went through the new Eastern's heart when President Obama opened up Cuba, because they were, I guess that was their bread and butter. They were running a lot of charters back
right.
and forth to Havana. And when, you know, the whole world was opened up to Cuba, that was kind of the end of that for them. And, you know, that was where their revenue, you know, went down the toilet from there. And I think
and they
the handwriting.
Had a lot of,
was, yeah, right. the handwriting was on the wall when Ed Wiegel left there. I think that, you know, it wasn't a matter of if, but when.
And they have had a lot of people leave as well. They've fired a lot of people and reduced their force.
Yeah.
Was, I think
yeah.
they said, up to 240 down
yeah.
to 103. So that's a significant amount of people that they let go to maintain what they were doing, and they only were down at 3 aircraft.
Jim Hart, are you still with us?
I'm here. Good.
Good. You got some thoughts about what you read?
Well, I read the fact that apparently these people that were talking to Eastern have agreed to bring Eastern on board, and the Eastern Airlines logo and everything else will come to them. They've agreed
right.
to this.
Yes. That's correct.
Okay.
And,
well,
of course, you know, the Eastern management have told the employees that they want very much for them to stay with us because they know so much about us, and they would love to have them become part of the new airline.
Well, Jim, I hope the new Eastern Group or the investors of Swift Air will realize that there's a large group of people that retired when the airline shut down that would like to see Eastern Airlines flying again.
When Ed Wiegel
left, it seemed like you couldn't talk to anyone. You couldn't get through. Dorothy and I both tried. Many people tried to get through, and they just didn't communicate, period. And you couldn't talk with anyone in operations. And so we just kind of lost touch with the Eastern Group. Whereas before, when Ed Wiegel was on board, we did have him on the show about three or four times.
Yeah.
And he was at our reunion twice, the Pioneers reunion.
Yep.
And so after that, it seemed like it just kind of, I don't know whether the people that were running the airline knew anything about the airline business. I think they had a general that was in charge, Odierno. I can't pronounce his
name.
Neil,
I hope that George Ken is still listening, because right now, here on Martha's Vineyard, it is totally dark. And the storms are coming, George.
Yeah, we had them before, Jim. Definitely on their way to you. Be my guest.
Live weather report. One from Martha's Vineyard and one from Long Island. That's great. Where can you get that on radio? Anywhere in the world. You just can't do it.
Neil, you had a birthday that you were going to announce?
Yeah. We have a birthday that we want to announce, and some of you, especially flight attendants, will remember. And this was sent to us by Jody Gross, Gross, G-R-O-S-S. And Jody says that Peggy Goodrich, the retired Eastern Airlines flight attendant, is celebrating her 94th birthday this month. And Peggy started with Eastern Airlines in 1950, and she retired in 1989. And her first flight as a stewardess, that's what they call them back in those days, was on the Connie. Peggy won several awards while at Eastern, and one being presented by Floyd Hall. Huh?
Yep. Neil, that was in 1956.
Okay. Well, Peggy flew over. This is a wonderful thing here. Peggy flew over 100 MAC flights to and from Vietnam, bringing our heroes home. And we'd like to at this time, and everybody now clear your throat. We want to sing happy birthday to Peggy Goodrich on her 94th birthday. Oh, and by the way, Peggy still drives her car to wherever she needs to go. So everyone, let's start. Okay, Jim, you started it first. Go ahead, Jim, start it.
Happy birthday, Jim Peggy.
Happy
birthday to you.
Happy
birthday, Jim Peggy. We all love you.
Okay, and I want to also
somebody
say,
missed rehearsal.
Well, okay.
Now,
if you would like to, if you would like to contact Peggy by a postcard or a postcard, listen to me. I don't know whether they make those anymore, but by a letter, or I don't think Peggy does the email thing. But her name again is Peggy Peggy Goodrich Goodrich. And her address is 1880 1880 West Lyle Avenue, and that's in College Park, Georgia. And the zip code is 30337. 30337. I'll say it once more. 1880 West Lyle Avenue, L-Y-L-E, Avenue, College Park, Georgia, 30337. So I'd hope that she would get some cards from us, and I hope she has many, many more years ahead of her. And I've asked Jody to see if there might be a chance we can get her on our radio show. But she said she would be so happy to hear us do what we just did. So happy birthday, Peggy.
Happy birthday, Peggy.
Okay.
George,
Molly, what a great show we had tonight. I want to give one further announcement on Mary Block. And as you know, Mary Block has taken the little Eastern Flyer all the way from St. Louis, Missouri, all the way out to the West Coast, and she's finished the trip. And her email says that we all leave in small caravans heading home and doing a little sightseeing along the way. The mileage was 2,817 miles, not including our side trips and getting lost several times. Have been sightseeing all day and are now getting ready to leave for our cowgirl prom. Cowgirl prom. As you know, this is all a gal event here to celebrate our success in going to the Northwest. I would love to have gotten up with you guys on the radio show tonight, but as usual, time zone conflicts with our activities. But we have been running on our website a little report of Mary Block and her little Eastern Flyer. And the pictures she sent are great. And we'll post those on the website as well. So have a safe trip home, Mary. And we'll talk to you when get back and are looking for things to do. We'd like to have you on a radio show and share a little bit about your trip out west. Dorothy, you have.
Yes, I'm ready.
George,
I'm ready, Neil.
Not yet, Jim Hart. Hang on there. We got
hold
one
on,
more.
Jim. George had a letter he was going to read all to us from a gal, Lily.
George, let's
George,
read it.
Do you have that?
What was that? Oh, yeah.
The
let's
letter.
See. Yeah, I think I have that here. Hold on for a minute. Let's see.
In the meantime, let me just wish every one of you that are dads a happy belated Father's Day. We didn't get to talk to you yesterday, but happy belated Father's Day to all the dads.
Hoorah!
Out there.
Hoorah! Hoorah!
Thanks.
Okay, this is a modern Father's Day message, okay? And it says, "Dear Dad, I'm coming home to get married soon, so get your checkbook out. I'm in love with a man who is far away from me. As you know, I'm in Australia and he lives in Scotland. We met on a dating website, became friends on Facebook, and had long chats on WhatsApp. He proposed to me on Skype, and we've now had 2 months of a relationship through Viber. My beloved dad, I'd like your blessing, good wishes, and a really big wedding. Lots of love and thanks, your daughter Lily." Your daughter Lily. So the father's response was, "My dear Lily, wow, cool. I suggest that you two get married on Twitter, have fun on Tango, buy your kids on Amazon, and pay for it all through PayPal. And when you get set up with your new husband, sell him on eBay. Love your dad."
Very good.
Excellent. That was so cute. That was
very
excellent.
Good. Dorothy,
okay,
anything new on the website?
Yes, well, I just want to mention we do have the long notice on breaking air for Swift Air and acquiring Eastern Airlines. That's on the website under the EAL group. We have for next week, our show is going to be Fair Flying. So I'd like everyone to tune in and give us their thoughts of what they had, situations that they might have handled, that and letting people know how they overcame their fears. The following week, of course, is the July 4th weekend. and we're going to celebrate the 4th of July along with the honoring of Amelia Earhart's 80th anniversary. So I'd like everyone to join us for that as well. We do have an area in the calendar for any of the upcoming events that are coming up. And if you folks would like to have anything that we don't know about, to please send us anything that you wish to be on there, and we'll include it on the calendar, and that would be to host at EALradio.com, radioshow.com, sorry. We have another couple of videos that I have put up there that have been sent in. George Shin sent us a nice one in there, and we have some other things that are in the video. So please take a little moment, go in and take a look at them. Some of them are really very interesting to watch and to see. Back
hey,
to you.
Neil?
Yeah,
Neil?
George?
I just got a message from Jim Holder. He said he got blocked out of the show tonight.
I don't know why. There's some background noise, and I usually filter that as best I can. So I'll call Jim Holder. He's always welcome on our show, and I have to apologize for that. Okay, well, a great show, host and callers. Thank you so much for being with us. And Jim, before I turn you loose, I'm going to have Captain Steve to land this airplane. And, as you know, Captain Steve is our captain on all of our radio shows, and Captain Steve passed away about a month ago, a little bit more, and we remember him this way. And so, Captain Steve, let's see if we can put this airplane on the ground.
Good to be with you tonight, Mr. Producer. Another great, outstanding job on the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk to each other and to talk to Eastern Airlines.
Captain Neil.
Yes, Jim Hart, can we squeeze in another caller that is on the line right now?
Okay.
It sounds like it might be Norma Jean.
It is. Where do we read those 22 pages about Easter?
They're not 22 pages. I think something kept repeating. It's on the website under EAL Group.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Okay, Jim, how about finishing us up?
Okay, fine. And we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of our callers, you, our listeners, our guests, our hosts, and sponsors, which is REPA, which is the Retired Eastern Airlines Pilots Association. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends being with us again next week. And as we file our flight plan and destination to we don't know where just yet, please be with us. We love you, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Love you, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern. Good night.
Good night, Eastern. We love you.
Adios. Au revoir. I'll be the day. Good night.
Been almost
good night. Good night. Until we meet.